paper manufacturing company, and Faber, of course, is a maker of pencils. What a sly thing my subconscious was to name them thus. And not tell me. Coda. About 2 years ago, a letter arrived from a solemn young Vassar lady, telling me how much she enjoyed reading my experiment in space mythology, The Martian Chronicles. But she added, wouldn't it be a good idea, this late in time, to rewrite the book, inserting more women's characters and roles? A few years before that, I got a certain amount of mail concerning the same Martian book, complaining that the blacks in the book were Uncle Tom's, and why didn't I do them over? Along about then came a note from a southern white suggesting that I was prejudiced in favor of the blacks and the entire story should be dropped. 2 weeks ago, my mountain of mail delivered forth a pipsqueak mouse of a letter from a well-known publishing house that wanted to reprint my story, The Foghorn, in a high school reader. In my story, I had described a lighthouse as having, late at night, an illumination coming from it that was a godlight. Looking up at it from the viewpoint of any sea creature, one would have felt that one was in the presence. The editors had deleted godlight and in the presence. Some 5 years back, the editors of yet another anthology for school readers put together a volume with some 400, count 'em, short stories in it. How do you cram 400 short stories by Twain, Irving, Poe, Maupassant, and Bierce into one book? Simplicity itself. Skin, debone, demarrow, scarify, melt, render down, and destroy. Every adjective that counted, every verb that moved, every metaphor that weighed more than a mosquito, out. Every simile that would have made a submoron's mouth twitch, gone. Any aside that explained the two-bit philosophy of a first-rate writer, lost. Every story, slenderized, starved, blue-penciled, leached, and bled white, resembled every other story. Twain read like Poe, read like Shakespeare, read like Dostoevsky, read like, in the finale, Edgar Guest. Every word of more than three syllables had been razored. Every image that demanded so much as one instant's attention, shot dead. Do you begin to get the damned and incredible picture? How did I react to all of the above? By firing the whole lot. By sending rejection slips to each and every one. By ticketing the assembly of idiots to the far reaches of hell. The point is obvious. There is more than one way to burn a book. And the world is full of people running about with lit matches. Every minority, be it Baptist, Unitarian, Irish, Italian, Octogenarian, Zen Buddhist, Zionist, Seventh-day Adventist, Women's Lib, Republican, Mattachine, Foursquare Gospel, feels it has the will, the right, the duty to douse the kerosene, light the fuse. Every dimwit editor who sees himself as the source of all dreary blancmange, plain porridge, unleavened literature, licks his guillotine and eyes the neck of any author who dares speak above a whisper or write above a nursery rhyme. Fire Captain Beatty, in my novel Fahrenheit 451, described how the books were burned first by minorities, each ripping a page or a paragraph from this book, then that, until the day came when the books were empty and the mines shut and the libraries closed forever. Shut the door, they're coming through the window. Shut the window, they're coming through the door, are the words to an old song. They fit my lifestyle with newly arriving butcher censors every month. Only 6 weeks ago, I discovered that, over the years, some cubbyhole editors at Ballantine Books, fearful of contaminating the young, had, bit by bit, censored some 75 separate sections from the novel. Students reading the novel, which after all deals with censorship and book burning in the future, wrote to tell me of this exquisite irony. Judy Lynn Del Rey, one of the new Ballantine editors, is having the entire book reset and republished this summer, with all the dams and hells back in place. A final test for old Job 2 here. I sent a play, Leviathan 99, off to a university theater a month ago. My play is based on the Moby Dick mythology, dedicated to Melville, and concerns a rocket crew and a blind space captain who venture forth to encounter a great white comet and destroy the destroyer. My drama premieres as an opera in Paris this autumn, but for now, the university wrote back that they hardly dared to do my play. It had no women in it. And the ERA ladies on campus would descend with ball bats if the drama department even tried. Grinding my bicuspids into powder, I suggested that would mean, from now on, No more productions of Boys in the Band. No women. Or the women. No men. Or Counting Heads, male and female. A good lot of Shakespeare that would never be seen again. Especially if you count lines and find that all the good stuff went to the males. I wrote back, maybe they should do my play 1 week and the women the next. They probably thought I was joking. And I'm not sure that I wasn't. For it is a mad world, and it will get madder if we allow the minorities, be they dwarf or giant, orangutan or dolphin, nuclear head or water conversationalist, pro-computerologist or neo-Luddite, simpleton or sage, to interfere with aesthetics. The real world is the playing ground for each and every group to make or unmake laws, but the tip of the nose of my book or stories or poems is where their rights end and my territorial imperatives begin, run, and rule. If Mormons do not like my plays, let them write their own. If the Irish hate my Dublin stories, let them rent typewriters. If teachers and grammar school editors find my jawbreaker sentences shatter their mushmilk teeth, let them eat stale cake dunked in weak tea of their own ungodly manufacture. If the Chicano intellectuals wish to recut my wonderful ice cream suit so it shapes zoot, may the belt unravel and the pants fall. For let's face it, digression is the soul of wit. Take philosophic asides away from Dante, Milton, or Hamlet's father's ghost, and what stays is dry bones. Lawrence Stern said it once, digressions, incontestably, are the sunshine, the life, the soul of reading. Take them out, and one cold eternal winter would reign in every page. Restore them to the writer. He steps forth like a bridegroom, bids them all hail, brings in variety, and forbids the appetite to fail. In sum, do not insult me with the beheadings, finger choppings, or the lung deflations you plan for my works. I need my head to shake or nod, my hand to wave or make into a fist, my lungs to shout or whisper with. I will not go gently onto a shelf degutted to become a non-book. All you umpires, back to the bleachers. Referees, hit the showers. It's my game. I pitch, I hit, I catch, I run the bases. At sunset, I've won or lost. At sunrise, I'm out again, giving it the old try. And no one can help me. Not even you. This concludes the reading of Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. Copyright 1953-1981 by Ray Bradbury. This book was read by Christopher Hurt. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Don Congdon Associates Incorporated and was produced in 2005 by Blackstone Audiobooks Incorporated, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audiobooks. If you would like to obtain a complete catalog of our titles, or our monthly update telling you about new releases and our new collection of books on CD and MP3 CD, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. You may also obtain the same information from our award-winning website. Our address, all one word, is www.blackstoneaudio.com. Thank you.